Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
DeMar didn't have a great shooting night, but he found another way to contribute, which was on the boards, which was big time. And that's what we preach all the time. If your shots may not be falling, but you got to find another way to contribute to a win.
That was Toronto Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey after their 109-102 win over the Atlanta Hawks at the Air Canada Centre last night. The Raptors starting their regular season with, probably not the offensive display you wanted from DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. DeRozan was 4 of 16. Lowry was 3 of 11. But, DeMar DeRozan, 11 rebounds, a career high, 6 steals, a career high. He was all over the court in defense. Kyle Lowry added 10 assists as well. And the Raptors got balanced scoring. They had 7 players reach double figures in scoring, including all 5 starters. All 5 starters, as a matter of fact, got on the board within the first 4 minutes of the game. And, it's one of those things when you're a team that is defending its division title, when you're a team that has an eye on advancing through the playoffs this year, probably not the worst start you could have. You know what DeRozan's going to give you. You know what Kyle Lowry's going to give you. What you really had to like if you were Dwayne Casey is the performance you got from Tyler Hansbrough, from Patrick Patterson. I mean, literally everybody you brought in off the bench played a role in that game last night. And we've talked a lot about the Raptors' depth. I'll tell you what, that was one of those games. It was one of those games I truly believe the Raptors won because of their depth. Paul Jones is a Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. That was a win for depth, wasn't it?
It was, Jeff, and you know, you look at the game. I'm sure Dwayne Casey will review the video today. He's reviewed it last night, knowing Case being up till the hours of the morning. And it's one of those you look at it where things didn't always go the way you wanted it. The road, there were missed assignments. They weren't extremely sharp, but you can live with it because you got away with the win. And I just say it. I mean, if the result was the other way, if you lose that one, you look at it and you say, that's one that got away. Now it's one that you got, even though you weren't playing your best. So it was a good start. I like your idea, and it's true about the depth. 7 guys in double figures, everybody doing a little bit. It's almost better to have that than at times one guy leading you. We used to laugh at that all the time. I'm the guy with 40. Mm-hmm. I'm more leery of the guy that has 20, but he's got 10 assists because now all these other guys are involved. I don't have to stop one guy. I got to stop a whole bunch of them. And that's what happened last night with Toronto.
Paul, that was, with all due respect to DeMar DeRozan, that was exactly the type of game he would not been able to have played 3 years ago.
No. And look, we're done talking about DeMar's offense and, learning to drip and it's not about offense for him now. Mm-hmm. The guy's an elite scorer in the NBA. Go and look at last year, free throw attempts, and look at the guys he was in front of, Westbrook. He was in front of star players. Mm-hmm. He's in that echelon right now. There's no question about that. To become an elite player, you need to play the other end of the floor. You need to be able to stop somebody. There were instances last night, more so with big men that I saw, Amir Johnson a couple times, Patrick Patterson, just great individual one-on-one defense on Millsap as he tried to get to the hoop, on Horford. We're not double teaming. We're not going to force the ball out of your hands and get into rotation where Jeff Teague can run by us. We're going to guard our own men. And mm-hmm. you hear the phrase, guard a yard. Guard your own man. Like one step in either direction, multiple times. And that's all you have to do if you're going to be a good defensive team, because that way you don't have to rotate. And he did that last night really, really well with some of the big guys.
Paul Jones joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How surprised were you, and I know a lot of us in press row were, but how surprised were you when Tyler Hansbrough was the first guy off the bench, the first big off the bench?
Well, a little bit, but at the same time, he's the guy that knows the system. Where do you go? Maybe he's mm-hmm. earned that. You know, we're not in practice all the time. Maybe you reward that. And Millsap's he's a tough guy. He handles the ball a little bit on the outside. You know, maybe it's a Patrick Patterson matchup. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a James Johnson matchup. But maybe you don't go to that right away. You see if one of the other guys can do it. You save that look. You keep it in your pocket for when you need it. Maybe later. Maybe not even later in this game. Maybe later in the year.
Well, and the other thing too, Paul, I thought, and it was Mike Kareen of The Sun, sent that out on Twitter, and we were all, I think a lot of us were thinking the same thing. But I talked to Tyler after the game. And, I think maybe what Dwayne saw, there were a couple of instances where I thought DeMar was getting pushed around. There were a couple of calls he didn't get. Dwayne may have just thought, you know what, we've got an opposing team coming in here, making a bit of a physical statement. I'm going to put a guy in there, reputation alone. Tyler Hansbrough changes the tone of the game. Tyler Hansbrough's like, that's like the indication that, okay, we understand what you're doing. Here's our guy. And have at it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Jeff, because everybody needs a guy that's going to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
And, they've said it for years about Blake Griffin. Back in the day, it was Charles Oakley protecting Michael Jordan. And when Oakley came to Toronto and Vince Carter was here, you don't think that was one of his jobs? So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's a definite possibility. And, sometimes you adjust to the game. Yeah, DeMar's not getting a call, as you said. Put somebody in there that'll let the other team know exactly what you're doing.
Dwayne Casey made a point before this game that the Hawks are, they tend to fly under the radar, no pun intended. I mean, they made the playoffs, 7 years in a row?
Longest streak in the East.
Longest streak in the East. Paul Millsap is a terrific player. I mean, and with Al Horford back, they may be one team that a lot of us have overlooked. And for that reason, and I'm watching the matchups the Hawks are running out there against the Raptors, I got to think, if you're a head coach, that's kind of the way you want to start your season. Everybody would like to start the season, I guess, with a 40-point blowout. But me, I'd kind of rather match up against somebody I may be seeing in another important game down the stretch. And it's early in the year. My guys aren't hitting on all cylinders. I've discovered some things about some guys in my team. I discovered that Lou Williams is the guy he was for me in the preseason.
Yeah, no question, Jeff. The Spurs, the Hawks are very Spurs-like when you talk about, the way they play. They had last year on 13 occasions, they had more than 30 assists in a game. They had 26 last night. They have great ball movement. Budenholzer is a Popovich disciple. I remember even hearing comments from LeBron last year about, how the Hawks were running a number of sets similar to what San Antonio did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all you do is look at their ball movement. And the one thing that Toronto was able to do last night was turn them over, because I believe both teams had 26 assists. The Raptors were able to, turn them over and get out and beat them in transition, and they scored off Atlanta turnovers.
Yeah, they had 23 points off 19 turnovers, so they took advantage of it.
And that's especially live ball turnovers, when you turn it over and it creates a 2-on-1, a 3-on-2, even an open floor, a broken floor, 3-on-3, where there's driving lanes and space and where guys can get to the basket or get to the free throw line. So, I like what Toronto did last night. And like I said, the fact that they weren't totally sharp, they played well, but they weren't totally sharp. Dwayne Casey will see some things that have to be cleaned up. I saw some things that have to be cleaned up. But you get away with it, you get a win, and you can move on. It's not one of those games you look at and go, oh, boy, we need to have that one back. We let one get away.
Do you read anything into the fact that Jonas Valanciunas wasn't on the court down the stretch, crunch time?
Matchups, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Patterson gives you the better, I guess, against the three-point shooter. He gives you the better defense.
And that's where the depth comes in. You know, off the top of our conversation here, you said it was a win for depth. You know, you need a guy who can match up with a certain guy on the other team. Jonas had a hard time. He had two fouls in the first, you know, few minutes of the game. I would like to see Toronto use him on the other end. You know, he's not Shaquille O'Neal, but, you know, the thinking around Shaq was, well, we're going to put him in pick and roll on the defensive end, and we're going to get whatever we want. We're going to drive by him. If he backs up, we're going to get short jumpers. We're going to take advantage of him at the other end, at one end. Well, at the other end, it's because Shaq goes in the post and you just can't stop him. And the Raptors, I think, have that advantage or potentially have that advantage with Valanciunas this year if they're able to develop that. I mean, he scored 17 points last night?
Yeah.
He took five shots.
Yeah, exactly.
He took five shots and scored 17 points. So if they're able to, you know, get inside a bit and not just play total perimeter. I mean, they do get inside by getting in. They won points in the paint last night. You can drive it, but sometimes you just throw it into the big guy and just play old-fashioned smash-mouth basketball.
Paul, you've seen you're a day-one guy. I mean, you've seen these openers before. Where would you rate the crowd reaction to that opener? Kyle Lowry, after the game, you know, Kyle was kind of blown away by the response he got when he walked to center court to do the, you know, sort of the address the crowd, which is something I really like, by the way. I'm a real big fan of that. I know some people kind of roll their eyes, but I like the fact that the first thing the Raptors did to start the regular season was reestablish a connection with their fans. I think it's such a smart thing to do. But Kyle said afterwards, the ovation when he started to talk, that was almost a playoff ovation.
You know, Jeff, and that was the feel we had last night, wasn't it? It had almost the same look. I don't think the crowd was quite as intense, but they were pretty intense. I mean, just relative to the playoffs. And that's always been my knock on the Toronto crowd. The two P's, they're present, but they don't always participate. And I saw something I have never seen in 20 years in Toronto last night. Late in the game, Atlanta was making a run. Raptors were bringing the ball forward toward their bench, and they were kind of leaking oil a little bit. And the fans got up and cheered. That's the kind of stuff that happens in Portland.
Yep.
It happened in Utah back in the day when Stockton and Malone were there.
Golden State has it.
Golden State, yes. Now, we're getting, as you know, as Butch Carter said, we're getting an educated consumer. They understand now that it makes no sense to sit there and boo the guys. Get off your backside and encourage them. You catch more with honey than you do with vinegar. And I thought it was great. I rate it as number two behind opening night. But for buzz, Jeff, it's number one. There has never been more buzz around a team than there is this year. And even in the year when, you know, they won a playoff series and they lost in seven, Vince missed the shot the next year, there was a huge buzz around that team. But the game's grown so much in the last 12, 13 years with the people on board. I think there's a bigger buzz around this team this year, and I just think that the fans have to be cautious, support the team, but you know what? They're going to lose a couple in a row. It's going to happen at some point where you lose two, three in a row. It's not a big deal. Go back and look at last year. You know, you lose one, you win three. You lose one, you win four. You lose two, you win three. You lose one, you win four. That's how they go. They might not be a 20-game winning streak, but if you're winning, you know, 11 of 15, you know, 12 of 14, stuff like that, you're going to be fine. And I think the crowd has to stay behind the team. It's easy to look at the other side, but stay behind the team. And they were fantastic last night. They were fantastic.
You get to see your baby brother this weekend.
He's doing UCLA in Arizona. And I think he lands in Miami at sometime around 3 o'clock. Well, my mom's sending care package. So if you
there you go.
If you want it, get your butt to the arena. If not, it'll be gone by the time you
Paul, listen, thanks so much for joining us today. Have safe travels down to Florida.
All right, Jeff. My pleasure, man.
Take care. That is Paul Jones, our Raptors radio analyst of Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So, Mark, I forgot. Mark, it's silly, Jeff. It's a Saturday college football season. Mark Jones is going to be doing some college football. But anyhow, the Raptors go to Florida. Play the Orlando Magic on Saturday, then the LeBron James-less Miami Heat on Sunday. LeBron James, of course, will be otherwise occupied. LeBron James is no longer with the Miami Heat. He is back in Cleveland. And tonight is the night, much anticipated night. The Cleveland Cavaliers open the regular season at home against the New York Knicks. LeBron James's first regular season game back with the Cavaliers since he took his talents to South Beach. Bill Livingston is the Cleveland Plain Dealer columnist. You can follow him on Twitter at Livy70. And Bill Livingston joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Bill, Cleveland's had a lot of memorable sports moments across all the major sports. LeBron coming back as a member of the Cavaliers, where is this game going to rank, do you think, in the annals of Cleveland sports history?
Well, certainly, although there's no victory parades or anything for the season opener, it's certainly one of the more momentous events. I can't think of any player in Cleveland history who left, was wildly successful, and came back still in the prime of his career. Bob Feller stayed his whole career here, one of the great names. So did Jim Brown, left too early. Rocky Colavito came back when he was not the player he had been with the Indians. And the Indians kind of force-fed Jim Thome on the populace because they were building a statue to him, even though he played here, there, and mostly everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
This is an unprecedented event in the sports history of the town, certainly. And it's also, you know, it also gets into deeper chords, such as, you know, atonement, and all, both by the fans and James for the way he left and for the way he was treated here after he left. It's a significant cultural and sporting event tonight.
Bill, from what you've been able to gather since his return, is the LeBron James who is back with the Cavaliers different than the LeBron James who left? And he's obviously older and wiser and probably a more finished product. But as a guy, is he a different person? Can you tell that?
Well, I certainly think so. While he didn't craft the beautiful essay Lee Jenkins of Sports mm-hmm. Illustrated did, in which he announced his return, the sentiment certainly reflected in the story were his own. You know, he seems to, this is where he grew up. This is the place whose values endured in him, even after he left. This is where he wants to raise his children. And these are things that resonate with people everywhere, and especially in a city that's had population flight and hard times, like all over the industrial, once industrial belt of the United States.
Bill Livingston joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How is the relationship between the on-court relationship between LeBron, Kevin Love, and David Blatt worked out so far? Is there, I mean, clearly David Blatt's taking over.
There'll be an adjustment period of sorts, I'm sure. I believe they play at the Bulls tomorrow, and that's, you know, considered to be their top contender in the Eastern Conference. I don't expect him to win 70, to break the Jordan team's record of 72 victories,
mm-hmm.
but I think they'll be a strong team. I picked them to win the East. You know, we'll just have to see. They have to feel each other out a little bit. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love have never been in the playoffs, so that'll be a new thing in the spring. It's almost inconceivable that they won't have a good record and be a strong contender to certainly win the Eastern Conference. Mm.
I would think one of the issues, too, maybe issue is the wrong word. One of the things Kyrie Irving will have to learn as well is to find the balance of being deferential on the court to LeBron and Kevin, and also, you know, sort of claiming his own as well. And that's something that can only happen during games, isn't it? That's something that can only come
right, I think,
during the heat of a game.
I think the biggest adjustment will be by Irving, because mm-hmm. Love's not the same player with the same need to have the ball a lot as Irving and James are. And you know, it'll be up to Irving to make the adjustment. There'll be a lot of times where the offense is initiated by LeBron James. He's an absolutely unique player. He can play any position. He could play some emergency center if he had to. And you know, I've often said he's the best player I ever covered. And I covered Julius Erving. I don't know whether he's better than Michael Jordan. He will not have the six rings that Michael Jordan had.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as far as the unselfishness with which he plays, which has really been bled away from basketball with the marketing of superstars, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were one of the reasons purists loved them as well as new fans was that they were unselfish and they passed first. And LeBron is that type of player, a high scorer who still gets more of a personal buzz out of setting up a teammate.
Well, and like both, and another thing too, Bill, like more so than Bird and Johnson, although they kind of shared this trait as well. In some ways, his game defies a position, doesn't it? I mean, you could literally,
right.
You can play him anywhere.
Magic was that way a little bit.
Yeah, Bird less so. You're right.
The myth is that Magic played center against the Sixers in
right.
the finals. He jumped center. I
covered right.
that game. He jumped center. But he did play 1 and 4, which had never been done. He
mm-hmm.
played point guard and power forward, and no one had ever seen that. No, LeBron can play both forward positions. He can play both backcourt positions. And you could get away, as I said, with him for a few minutes as a center, certainly on offense. You know, it's just a versatility that, and he's a very good defensive player now, certainly straight up. It's the type of versatility that just makes coaches, you know, go back to the drawing boards and think up new and interesting ways to try to use it.
What do we know about David Blatt through the preseason?
Well, I'm willing to give him every chance in the world because we had had a string of the same guy twice in Mike Brown and Byron Scott. We had had a string of NBA lifers that didn't work out. And actually the future of basketball for some time has been, I think, an international play with the liberation of big men from settling down in the low post and waiting for an entry pass with Dirk Nowitzki's success, with the Gasol brothers' success in the NBA. I think it's a more free-flowing game, more dependent on threes. It's more imaginative. I think it's got a lot of ball movement, like the San Antonio Spurs played. They have a number of international players on their team that are stars. And I think it's the type of basketball that certainly hooked me as a boy.
Mm-hmm.
The old Knicks of Walt Frazier and Willis Reed, you know, hit the open man and move the ball. That type of basketball had kind of been subsumed to an isolation game that was really kind of boring. Barkley backing in and backing in, and now that's coming back.
Bill, it was terrific to talk to you today. Should be a lot of fun tonight in Cleveland. Thanks very much for doing this.
All right, thank you.
It's Bill Livingston, columnist with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. You can follow him at Livy70. He's a terrific, terrific writer. Such a good paper. And we appreciate Bill Livingston joining us. And guy knows how to write basketball, man. Well, the guy knows how to write anything, but he writes basketball like a dream. Speaking of Twitter, earlier this morning I tweeted out a feature story for Yahoo Sports done in 2010 by Eric Adelson, who is another terrific feature writer for Yahoo Sports. And Eric Adelson went to Madison Bumgarner's hometown to do a story on the family. It's a town in North Carolina, nicknamed Bumtown because there's a lot of Bumgarners in the town. It is a wonderfully crafted piece. Gives you a real sense of what this guy is about. If you read this piece, you know, it's funny because I read it before we came out and did the show. And as I was doing the show, I've got the MLB Network on up here. And they had an interview with Madison Bumgarner. Clearly, I couldn't hear what he was saying. But the picture that Eric Adelson painted of Madison Bumgarner's family and his background, and when you saw him up in TV, you made you smile because it fit in exactly with what your expectations would have been about somebody coming from this particular town. I cannot stress enough. I've tweeted the link. It's a terrific story. You've got to read it. Everybody's going to be talking about Madison Bumgarner. Everybody's going to be talking about Madison Bumgarner as a result of his success last night. And Eric Adelson, who wrote the story for Yahoo Sports, will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The innings I wasn't thinking about innings or pitch count. I was just thinking about getting outs until I couldn't get them anymore, and we needed someone else. So, fortunately, we was able to get some quick innings, and I was able to stay in there.
It's about as excited as Madison Bumgarner gets. Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. I like what Matt Cain said about Madison Bumgarner. He said, I just don't think the guy's a pulse. The most amazing thing about that performance last night, you know, beyond the statistics, which speak for themselves, was just the matter-of-fact nature of how he goes about his work. It's almost robotic. But at the same time, there's his very lack of, apparent lack of emotion, apparent lack of any sort of demonstrative actions, facial expressions, anything like that. In some ways, it makes it almost more endearing because as robotic as he is in the way he pitches, there's just such a sense of calmness, a sense of I've been here before. And of course, he has been there before. He's World Series rings. He's got two World Series rings. But man, to think that this kid's 25 years old and he's under contract through 2019, he's going to make $9 million a year less than Mark Burley next year. Think about that. Roughly $9 million a year less than Mark Burley. I think he makes less money than Ari Dickey next year. That's just weird. We made a big deal out of Randy Johnson coming into the game in 2001 and throwing an inning of relief after starting in game 6. And I was at that game, and I'm not going to take anything away from Randy Johnson. But to come in on 2 days rest this time of the year with 260-odd innings, whatever it is, 250-odd innings at your belt, and pitch the way Madison Bumgarner did. And I don't know if you heard our conversation with Mike Wilner earlier. The thing about that performance yesterday is that at no point was I sitting there thinking, all right, this is where Bosch has to take him out of the game. This is where you got to go back into the bullpen. This is the at-bat I don't want to face. This is the matchup I don't want. I mean, even when Alec Gordon got in third base, I'm thinking, okay, you're going to let Madison Bumgarner take care of this. That's remarkable if you watch a lot of baseball, to have that sense of, to have that comfort level with a guy. Now, I don't know how many players, how many pitchers I've kind of had that feeling with. Mariano Rivera as a closer, that would be the closest thing. But I mean, Mariano Rivera ain't working 5 innings. Just that sense that everything's going to be okay and somehow Madison Bumgarner's going to figure a way out of it. You no doubt heard earlier in the show, I was talking about a feature story on Madison Bumgarner written in 2012. I believe I mistakenly said it was written in 2010. I tweeted out a link to the story earlier this morning before we went in the air. A lot of people have read it. A lot of people have responded and saying thanks for the link. As I said, you're going to hear a lot about Madison Bumgarner all day, and rightly so. Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports went to Hickory, North Carolina to do an article on Madison Bumgarner and on Madison Bumgarner's family. It is a remarkable article. And as I made the point, you read this article, you watch Madison Bumgarner during his interviews, you watch him on the mound, and it all makes sense. The way he is, the way he reacts, it all comes together. Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports, you can follow him on Twitter, @Eric_Adelson, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. I'd read this piece actually when it came out, and I was thinking about it today. I was trying to find something that I thought sort of summed up Madison Bumgarner. This, in fact, is the piece. Tell us a bit about his family and the background of the Bumgarner family in Hickory and Bumtown, as you refer to the tiny area of North Carolina.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks for having me on. I mean, this is a really fun, interesting piece to do. And I went there in 2012, not because Madison was a superstar, but because I had heard about the town and that it was known as Bumtown because there were so many Bumgarners there. And the first place I went was the cemetery, which was right across the street from where Madison's dad lived. And there were several gravestones. They all said Bumgarner from various generations. And it was true. I mean, if you look at the phone book, it's Bumgarners everywhere. And this is a century-old town with very deep roots in North Carolina. It's about an hour out of Charlotte. And I drove up to his dad, Kevin Bumgarner's house, and he was standing outside the house saying, "Welcome to Nowhere." Already, even before we even started speaking, you just get a sense of the humility of the down-to-earth personality that he had, and from a town that really has fallen economically over the course of many years. And he still lives there, and there's still a lot of pride, but it's not, look at me, boastful pride. It's just sort of a deep pride, and you can tell that came down from generations mm-hmm. to Madison. And so he grew up in a house in a log cabin that his dad built with his own hands, and I went and visited that, and there's very little in the way of memorabilia. I mean, there's some, but it's mostly from when he was a little boy. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really get a sense that it's a major leaguer's dad there. And then talking to Kevin Bumgarner, he drove me around the town. He's very gracious. And it wasn't like, oh, he gets it all from me, or I knew he'd be a star. He's just as surprised as we are. I mean, you get a sense that he's watching his game last night and just, I can't believe this is happening to my son, rather than I made this happen for my son. And that's the sense you got from him. And that's why, as you point out, Jeff, it's really not a big surprise to see the way he holds himself, because it's very humble.
You know, and Eric, I think there's those of us who've done this business for a long time. Sometimes we sort of look at that as it's almost a defense mechanism. You know, I used to always talk about Derek Jeter, Buster Posey in some ways. They're like that. They're masters of being very accessible but saying nothing. But with Madison, you really get the sense, and I don't know why it is, because I haven't interviewed him a lot. Again, I'm just kind of drawing the conclusions I see in TV and reading articles like this. You just really do get the sense that this he is what he is. I mean, that's it. This is exactly what he's like. He doesn't get rattled by stuff.
Yeah. No, and I think that comes from the lack of pressure he seems to feel, because I think we were all nervous watching that game,
mm-hmm.
whether you're cheering for the Royals or the Giants. I mean, in the ninth inning, I think your palms sweat watching it for everybody involved, and he just seems so cool. And I just think that's the lack of pressure that comes from his parents. When I asked him about all the money that's coming in, he says his dad said, "I don't want any of it." This is back in 2012 when he got his first big deal. He just wants a pool in his backyard. He still umpires games. I mean, rec league games. This is not somebody who's putting a lot of pressure on his son.
Mm-hmm.
Madison's mother is very religious, and there were pictures that he showed me of growing up and his wedding, and it was just very very simple. And so you don't really get the sense that there's such thing as a do-or-die moment in their lives, because they come from a town and a background where you just do what you can to get by, and you're a good person, and you see what happens. And that's really what I get from Madison, too.
You know, we're joined by Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports. Eric did a travel to Hickory, North Carolina to do a feature on Madison Bumgarner in 2012. This is one of my favorite books, or one of my favorite stories by Shel Silverstein, and you work it into the story. I'm just going to read it. Madison himself, when asked about his hometown during spring training in Arizona, sounded like his dad. "It's just home. It's where I grew up. I always look forward to going back there. There's no place like home for anybody. That's pretty much it, I guess. There are definitely a lot of Bumgarners there, but it's just home." And he owns a home about 30 minutes from Bumtown. And you tie it into The Giving Tree, which is a Shel Silverstein book about a tree that gives a little boy its leaves, its branches, its trunk, just so that the boy would be happy. And eventually there's nothing left but a stump, yet the boy comes back, as you say, in old age to rest and take advantage of what the stump does provide, you know, and it makes the stump happy. And you look at it, and that's kind of the sense you get of this guy.
Yeah, no, this was a powerful moment for me. In 2012, I was a relatively new parent, and I was talking to somebody who was really on the other side, somebody who had already raised his child and sort of let him go into the world. And we were sitting at the end of the interview, it was getting dark, and we were just sitting in his driveway in his truck, and he was getting emotional. He was starting to cry just thinking about how much he loved being a dad to this little boy. And it reminded me of The Giving Tree, which is a story, you know, I love. And it's funny, when my daughter was born, Wright Thompson, another well-known, mm-hmm. very excellent writer, he sent me this book, The Giving Tree, and it was a reminder of my childhood, but also a preview of my parenthood. And again, you get the sense from Kevin Bumgarner that I don't want anything back from Madison. I want to give to him and do whatever I can. And I'm a flawed parent like everybody else, but I just love being a parent to him, watching him pitch. And it really felt like he was just as happy watching him pitch in front of 30 people as he was in front of 3 million. Mm-hmm. And I think that when, you know, I myself am not an expert parent, but I learned from that interview, because it's just, you give whatever you have to give to a child, you expect nothing back, but eventually that child grows up and gives to his child. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it goes. And so it started to me like, when I got there, it was about a place, but really it's about a place that it ends up being about a place spiritually that we're all in, whether religious or not. It's really about raising a child and just hoping for the best.
Eric, it's a terrific story, and thanks so much for writing it, and thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's been a real treat.
Thank you for reading it and sending it out. It's neat to have this story come back to me, because it's been a long time, but I really enjoy doing it. It's a special place, and I'm very happy for this family.
Eric, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports. Again, this I'm gonna retweet a link to it once we're in our break, but. Like I said, you're going to hear he's Madison Bumgarner's World Series MVP. You're going to hear a lot of people talking about him. I know Tim and Sid will be talking about him. They'll be talking about him in primetime sports. Read this, and you'll get a sense of a guy that you're going to be hearing a lot of today. And there's some terrific just anecdotes. Marrying his high school sweetheart in a private ceremony, wearing jeans and carrying a pocket knife. It was father built a wall around his son's high school bullpen to keep scouts and agents out. Like, it's a real powerful article about a kid in a small town, not particularly well off, family split by divorce, yet very religious mother, sort of taking care of the off-field stuff. And a father taking care of the on-field stuff, but at the same time, probably the model dad if you're an athlete. You know, a guy who's always there, a guy who'll go the extra distance to see that you get what you need, but a guy who's going to stand back when you're on the field and is going to let you, as his line is, you know, Madison's got to grow his own wings. A guy who's going to stand back and lets you do what you're going to do in the field without putting pressure on you. It really is a terrific story. And as I said, I'll be sending out a link to it as soon as we take the break. Renaud Lavoie is our NHL insider from TVA Sports. He is our regular Thursday insider. The Habs wrap up their Western Canadian swing tonight in Vancouver. The Blackhawks play the Senators. We'll take our weekly look around the NHL with Renaud Lavoie when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.